It is true. We all dream about being heroes. We like the idea. It makes us feel good when we get to see ourselves as a hero. And we like stories about heroes. We like movies about heroes. Right now, all the rage is all the superhero movies. And so you'll recognize some of these photographs right here. Here's some of the heroes right here coming up. There's one of them right there, Man of Steel. There's another one. Take a look at that. Pick out your favorite superhero. Yep, Spider-Man, some of the ones that are probably, oh, threw a jazzer in there. Yeah, some of the heroes, you know, Batman. Maybe not. So, but I mean, heroes, we love heroes, and I understand it starts, you know, pretty super young. With the Avenger movies, all the kids and adults that are going to them broke the all-time record for the gross for the weekend for all movies that have ever been, $375 million we spent to go see Avengers Endgame. And it's sneaking up on number one of all time, over $800 million we've spent, because we love heroes. We like stories about heroes and being around heroes. And it starts pretty young. Listen to this. This is a kindergarten teacher talking. Since lots of my students are children of friends of mine, they know my first name, but I prefer that they call me my last name in school. At the beginning of the year, I told my class, outside you know me as Midge. But here in school, please call me Mrs. Landry. One boy turned to a classmate and said in a serious voice, Joshua, outside you know me as Timmy, but here at school, I want you to call me Batman. It starts pretty young. And I understand the problem. I mean, we want to be heroes. When I was in the backyard playing baseball, it was always the World Series, the seventh game. There was always two out, and the bases were loaded, and there was three balls and two strikes, you know, and I'm up to bat, and here comes the pitch. And of course, you know, home run. I win the game. I'm the hero. You know, you're running around the bases. How many times in the front yard, in my driveway, you know, shooting hoops, did I count it down? You know, seventh game, NBA Finals, 3 seconds left on the clock, 2-1, you let it fly. If you don't make it, you go grab the ball again, you know, and you count it down again, 2-3-1, let it fly. If you miss it, well, you got fouled. But of course, you know, I mean, everybody wants to be a hero. Everybody likes the idea of feeling like they're a hero. And now here's the problem, of course, is that in everyday life, we find out pretty quickly that we don't have super strength. We don't have X-ray vision. You know, spider webs don't fly out of my hands against the bad guys. And I'm not Batman. So this series is about something different. It's not about being a hero. It's about being a hero maker. It's not about being the best. It's about bringing out the best in other people. So take your note sheet out, and the big idea right off the bat, you can write it. A hero maker brings out the best in someone. So that's what it's about, really. What we're going to talk about during this series, and it's something everyone can do, is how do I bring out the best? Now, just with your, like, in the margin of your notes, like, who's one person this summer, maybe it's a friend or a family member, that you would really like to bring out the best in? Might be your spouse or someone you work with. Just jot their name down. Who pops into your mind? Like, if you're going to be a hero maker this summer, we talked about this being the best year ever. If this is going to be the best summer ever, one of the ways that occurs is bringing out the best in someone else, being a hero maker. Here's a part of the Bible. It says, iron sharpens iron, and one person sharpens another. It's a great concept, or this is a really cool verse. It's saying that heroes are not born, they're made. That we all work together to sharpen each other and make each other better and bring out the best in one another. And that's how heroes happen. Jim Kruger is a name, you may not recognize it, I didn't recognize it, but I certainly recognize some of the stories and heroes that he has brought to life. In this little video, he's talking to a group of church leaders, but it's really a message for everyone about hero makers, so check this out.
I'm Jim Kruger. I create heroes for a living. I was the former creative director of Marvel Comics. I write every single day, and I create superheroes for DC, for Marvel, for Dark Horse, for Image. I've seen ideas that I've worked on, you know, in movie theaters and film. I pretty much live, eat, and breathe heroes every single day. My dad, who had a garage, would take me on tow jobs when I was 5, 6 years old, and he would, to pay me for helping him and holding a rag while he did the actual work, he would buy me a comic book or two. So even comics from a very young age, it was, you know, there's a nostalgic element. There's a, wow, father, you know, in the midst of it. That was really powerful. So at that young age, I became clearly some sort of storyteller, but I never even anticipated what I could become. So I started studying advertising, and I went into advertising in Wisconsin. It didn't go very well because I kept on using humor in these ads, and it's a very serious business. But anyhow, I wrote a bunch of ads for myself and start sending them to Marvel because I knew their comics, I knew their business, and I knew that I could help them sell in an advertising sense. And it was there that I began to meet people, and I was encouraged to even begin trying to write stories and that kind of thing. So some of the non-negotiables of creating a hero, and everyone has their own way, but for me, if I'm going to create a hero, they didn't start as a hero. Because almost the tyranny of story is that if a person is going to be a hero at the end, they can't begin that way at the beginning. And the hero's journey begins in really oftentimes broken places and kind of lost places. And so often that hero maker is the one that finds the person who is lost and who is able to walk them through whatever tragedy they face so that they can ultimately, you know, become what they can become. You can't have a hero journey without the hero maker. You really can't. The whole idea of a hero maker is that person who, it's wrong to call them an assistant because ultimately they're there in every single element of the story, of that hero's story. Like, you know, when we think about Alfred and Batman, Alfred is someone who knows how to tend to wounds. Alfred is someone who has seen combat himself. Alfred is someone who takes the chaos, the raw chaos that is the pain in Batman's life, and Alfred helps it be honed into the character who can ultimately save Gotham. A lot of pastors want to be Batman, and look, let's be honest. If you have a choice between being Batman and Alfred, who doesn't want to be Batman? The point is that I think a pastor is supposed to be Alfred, not Batman. I really do. Because Batman's purpose is to go out there, he's supposed to go and stop crime and save people, and he is out in the city all the time. He's in the businesses, he's in the community, he's always out there. I need an Alfred there who's going to help me remember that the things I give myself to, if I give myself to them too much, I'm going to be destroyed by those things. Because all the things that can grab us are the things that will destroy us if, you know, God is not where he belongs in that life. You know what's really interesting is a lot of the villains that I've written in the past, they began as heroes. They began as good guys, you know, they began as really powerful men or really powerful women, and they've been on the track of how do I help people, and then somehow along the track it gets turned inward. It's like there's this danger of helping people that ultimately kind of goes back to your ego. And so I've watched over and over again heroes become villains in the midst of this, and I think that that's a real danger too, but it's probably not a danger to a hero maker. Now, if I was having conversation with a pastor, I would encourage him with the fact that, you know, there once was one Spider-Man comic book that came out every other month, and then it came out every month, and then there was Spider-Man and a Spider-Man team-up, and then there was Spider-Man team-up, Peter Parker the Spectacular Spider-Man, and things began to expand, and then other heroes that were introduced in Spider-Man would get their books, and then heroes introduced in their books, and those books would get more books, and all of a sudden you had this living, breathing Marvel universe where all these characters were interacting, and it was amazing. What I would say to a pastor is that it's more heroic to be a hero maker than a hero. Because ultimately, what you are in the process of is you are making a universe of courageous beings who defy the status quo that we're all stuck in every day.
Yeah, so it's cool. What name did you write down on your outline? Who do you care about? And for you, part of your summer can be, how do I make them a hero? And the way we do that is we bring the best out in them. So some practical stuff today as you grab your note sheet. Write number one, find out how they're wired. You form the way I think and feel and knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because you made me an amazing and wonderful way. I'm reading this book right now. It's called The Captain's Class. There's some recommendations at the bottom of your note sheet. And they've done an interesting study. They've put this matrix together, and they've gone back and they've studied all these different types of teams, athletic teams, from across the spectrum of sport. And they've used a formula to determine which teams they think are the best from all these different eras. And then they researched them, and they researched them from the perspective of a leadership or a captain. It's kind of an interesting book, and I'm going to read you a little part of it. Brazil has been famous forever for their soccer teams. There was different types of captains that worked with them. This is one of the things one of the captains said of the Brazilian soccer team. In Brazil, there is no uniform way of thinking, and there is less formal education. There are some very poor kids who only go to school for a couple of years before they start playing, and the captain has to know that. We need a leader who is the guide for many, many things. So being captain means in Brazil, it will test the deepest nature of your personality. You have to try to understand people to know their backgrounds. If you understand them better, you can help them be more. So that's the idea, is understanding someone and how they're wired. And I like this picture about how people are knit together. It reminds me of my grandmother. I oftentimes saw her knitting, and one Christmas I got a sweater that she had knitted for me, and it was a one of a kind. It was unique. It wasn't mass produced. She had knit that together. There was a starting point where God says he makes life, and every person is unique. They're knit together. They're not mass produced. They're not, you know, pressed into some mold. Who you are is who you are because God puts you together in a very special way, uniquely. So when you're a hero maker, you got to figure out what that is with people. And there's a problem, of course, because I tend to think other people think and feel like I feel because I think the way I think and feel is the best way to think and feel. So obviously they would do it like me. And then I find out that, no, they're unique to who they are. I have to find out what they're like. Even in families where there's similarities, people are different and they're unique. So you have to become a student. So here's some guidelines. You can just write it in your notes. If you want to figure out what people are like, ask yourself these questions. What are their natural strengths? So think of your wife right now, or your brother, or your grandpa, or someone you work with. What's their natural strength? When they were knit together, what just comes natural to them? Maybe they're good at math, or they're good at logic, or they're athletic, or they're outdoorsy, or they're coordinated, or whatever it is. They have a gift of gab. They get along well with people. They're mechanical. They're good with technical stuff. I mean, what are their natural strengths? These are the things that don't work very hard to do. It just comes natural to them. What is your wife naturally good at? What is your husband or your brother or your boyfriend? What are they just naturally good at? That's how they're wired. Keep it in mind. Here's another one. What are they like when they're tired? If you really want to figure someone out, they say figure out, you know, from the perspective when they're tired or they're under pressure. You see certain things. When I'm tired, there's a certain part of my person that sort of rises to the surface. And when you're trying to bring out the best in someone, you've got to get them from all different angles. How are they wired? What are they like when they're tired? What are they like when they're under pressure? Here's another one. What are their weaknesses? Every Superman has a kryptonite. What are the temptations that they're vulnerable to? When you're trying to figure out one of your children, for example, and you're trying to say, well, I'm going to be a hero maker to them, and they're younger, you're trying to figure them out. What are their weaknesses? You can already start to see them. What are their temptations? It's figuring people out, knowing how they're wired. Here's the last one, and this is a good one. What's the number one area that they need to grow in? So you're trying to be a hero maker, and you're with your children or someone at work, and this is your summer. You're going to bring out the best in them. Asking yourself this question, what's the number one area that they need to grow in? I've heard different versions of this story I'm going to read you, but this is the one that I like the best. Nikola Tesla visited Henry Ford at his factory, which was having some kind of difficulty. Ford asked Tesla if he could help him identify the problem area. Tesla walked up to a wall and a boilerplate and made a small X in chalk on one of the plates. Ford was thrilled, and he told him to send him an invoice. The bill arrived for $10,000. Ford asked for a breakdown. Tesla sent him another invoice indicating $1 charge for marking the wall with an X and $9,999 for knowing where to put it. So here's the thing. When you know someone's wiring, you know where to put the X. And that's important. And we tend to view people like we view ourselves. And we forget that they were knit together by someone. And they're amazing and wonderful, and they may be like you in some ways and not like you in some other ways. Now, here's the only way to figure it out is like to be asking God, well, how did you make them? And observe and become a student of who they are. Here's a verse in the Bible. This is a good one. In His grace, God has given us different gifts for doing certain things well. So you're watching people. You're becoming a student. So number one, I'm going to be the person that brings out the best in them, figure out how they're wired. Number two, stay in step with God's plan and agenda. I say this because I know what I have planned for you, says the Lord. I have good plans for you. I don't plan to hurt you. I have a plan to give you hope and a good future. My son has been talking to me about this new study called Confirmation Bias. And they've been studying groups of people, and what they're realizing is that we all have a bias or a judgment when we start to work with other people. And confirmation bias is when we're so biased that in the interaction of the relationship, we only hear the things that confirm our bias. Because we come in with a bias into the relationship. And then we listen for certain things that confirm what we think is true. Now, when you're trying to bring out the best in someone and they are knit together by God and you're figuring out their wirings, one of the things you've got to figure out is how do I stay in step with God's plan and agenda and not my own judgments or biases? Because I have a plan, too, for everybody I meet. I know how they should live their life and I know the steps they should take. Clarice is so funny. My wife, from time to time, she'll, you know, sort of shoot one over the bow of the ship to give me a little warning because I as we go through life, I'll tend to try to push her into a box to do things the way I do things. And when I go too far, she's cute, she'll say this to me. She'll go, oh, okay, I'll do that right away because then when I'm done, I can be just like you. That's my warning shot that I need to back off. We all have plans and agendas for our children. We all have things we want them to be, but the question is, can I line up and be in step with God's plan and agenda? When I was in junior high school, I was into all different sports, and so the seasons would roll by, and I would just roll into the next sport. All my friends and I, that's how we lived. We played sports all the time. But I also came from a musical family. So I ended up being in the band in junior high school. So in this particular band that I was in, it was also a marching band, I had to play an instrument called the baritone. Now, let me give you a picture of the baritone. There it is. Now, that's like a small tuba. Now, but you need to know that in junior high school, I hadn't like fully blossomed yet. I was sort of still small. I hadn't developed yet. You know, I was on the smaller side. You know, in junior high school, everybody's hormones at a different speed. Let's just say mine hadn't kicked in yet. I was still small. It's so embarrassing because, like, in junior high school, when you're in PE and, like, the guy next to you has, like, got a full beard already and you don't have a spot of hair on you. And that's embarrassing for a junior higher. You know, you're just like, your voice hasn't changed yet. And this is the instrument that I have to play. You know, it's this giant tuba. I can hardly lift this thing. And I'm also in the marching band. So sure enough, you know, they got us out on the field marching us around. We're supposed to do all this thing and stay in step. And, you know, I can hardly even hold this thing as I'm marching around. And the mouthpiece on it is like this big. It like covers my whole face. It's just ridiculous, you know. And now we're going to be in a parade. And I've got to carry that thing, you know. It's almost the size I am. And I'm struggling with this thing. And I had one saving grace. They set us up in lines and put me out on the edge. And the fellow that was in the very front, the band leader, had this big kind of pole that he had with one of those great hats. And he started marching us like this. He's very exaggerated. Here we go, you know, one, two, one, two. And we're all start to march, you know, and I'm kind of going like this. And then he starts moving us down the street, you know, and I'm wobbling, carrying this thing. There's nothing coming out of it but a couple of you know, that's about it. You know, everybody else is playing, and we're going down the street, and, you know, I'm zigzagging like a snake along in this line. It's just ridiculous. My saving grace was what this guy would do, the band leader, is he's facing us, and he's going like this, and then he comes over to the side like this as we pass by, and he's marching like this. He's got his thing, and everybody's going by, and he was smart enough to put me on the end. He sees me zigzagging towards him. As soon as I come, he gets up alongside me, and as I'm marching, he starts being very exaggerated like this, right alongside me, showing me all the steps. And it wasn't that difficult to get in step with him. And I was able to march. Now here's the question. Are you in step with God's agenda and plan when it comes to other people? Or are you working from your own, in your own agenda, your own bias? See, because the problem is that what I think is right and the timetable that I think they should take could be very different from the one that God's taking. Look in your notes. Here's a verse. There's a right time for everything. Everything on earth has a special season. So when I first started working with families and family and counseling, this was a huge problem for me because they would come in and talk with me and I would listen just long enough to form a plan, and then I would put the agenda together and the steps, and it seemed logical and it seemed like the way that we should go. But oftentimes I'd be out of step in what God was doing. Let me give you an example. A guy comes to see me. He's living with this woman, and you know, everything's a total mess, and they're fighting all the time, they're not getting along. He comes and sees me, and I'm listening, and I'm thinking as he's talking to me, well, gosh, of course, the first thing is, man, you gotta like move out and get your life together, and you know, you can't be with this girl like this. This is crazy. And I'm listening to him, and he's telling me about how he doesn't know what to do and he loves her so much, and I'm just waiting for him to shut up so I can tell him how to live his life. Have you ever done that to anybody? And so I've already got the plan and the steps all worked out. And just as he's, you know, finishing up, it was like God stopped me for a second and said, are you even going to ask me what my plan is? So I just stopped and listened. Do you know the only way you're ever going to know what God's plan is to ask him? Or if he stops, you'd be willing to listen? Because he knit them together. He's got a plan. He controls the seasons and the timing. When he whispers to me, he's in a huge breakdown with his father. That's where I want to start. I'm like, his father? You know, I know you know everything, God, but did you hear the story? So I want him to go to his dad and talk to his father about their relationship. So out of left field, you'd say, hey, you know, how's stuff going with your dad? And then it starts. And I said, well, what if God's been working on his heart? And what if he's ready to talk to you? And what if there's a chance of being reconciled and getting somewhere? Oh, no, he'll never do. Well, I don't know. It's just, I think he might be ready. And sure enough, he goes and talks to his dad. And sure enough, God had been working on his heart. And they're able to reconcile their relationship. And then you notice that everything else just starts to fall in line because God had known the seasons and the timing, and he had an agenda and a plan. I use a little diagram to show this to people now, and I'll throw it up here for you. So here it is right here. Like, I'll write this on a piece of paper and say, well, we're over at the X, and the obvious thing that seems like we should do to get a result is like right there in front of us. And be careful for the obvious because it isn't always God's plan. And, you know, that's what we should do. But God said we're going to go over and work in this other area right now. And it seems like we're being sidetracked. It doesn't seem logical that that's what God would want to start with or do. But when you go over to that area and get something squared away there, you end up further down the road. He's further down the road in 6 months than he would have been if he started where I thought he should have started. Now, here's the question. Who did you write on your note sheet today? And have you already got a plan and agenda figured out? what they should do? Would you be willing to scrap it and ask God, what's your plan? What's your agenda? Now, number three, know when to challenge, comfort, or cheer. We must consider how to rouse one another to love and good works. And this is the hands-on part. This is the part where you have to sort of get involved in people. You know, you can't just be on the sidelines and watch them live their life. You've got to jump in and talk with them. And part of that is challenging them. Part of it is speaking into people's life and telling them they can be more than they are. They can go further than they're going. It's perilous at times to challenge people and to talk with them about something that's going on in their life, but be willing to step into their life and saying, hey, you're better than that. God's going to do more than that with you. You can go further. You can do more than you're thinking. You can call something out of someone. If you know how they're wired and you're in step with God's plan, there's a tremendous amount of authority there. You can call with a challenge that a lot of times people need to get further and do something better. Of course, there's a big difference between challenging someone and pressuring someone. We've all been pressured by salespeople. And they pressure you and pressure you. And here's how you can tell the difference between a challenge and a pressure. When someone challenges me, it's because they want something better for me. They want me to have something. But when someone pressures me, it's because they want something for them. A lot of parents do that to their kids. They pressure them into sports or academics or something, pressure them, because they want to brag about their kids. That's not a challenge. Like when you feel that pressure from someone coming on to you, just know that the only reason they're even talking is because they want something for them. And by the way, God doesn't pressure people, because he loves us. And churches shouldn't pressure people. You love each other, you challenge each other, but don't pressure. Now this next one, the idea of comforting, this is the gentle side of being a hero maker. And just listen to how I saw it happen recently, because I know for guys it's like all soft and gentle, I won't do that, but I saw this great picture of it recently. My wife and I are godparents to a couple of children now that are adults now. And last month, I got to go be with the family because the girl got married, and it was great to be there. Now, the guy, he's been married for a long time. He has a unique family. He married a woman whose parents were both deaf. And so her first language was sign language. She's extremely sensitive, and they have a really interesting dynamic in their family. Very tender, sensitive people. Their oldest son, who's a teenager, wants to fly jets. He's going to go into the Air Force, and he was a scout, and he's a teenager. He's in some kind of scouting program. He goes away to this scouting program. He's been homeschooled, so he hasn't been really out in too many things. And sure enough, that night, all the guys are out talking by the tents and everything. The boys are talking, and it gets grungy. You know, they're talking about girls and what they've done or what they want to do, and it just gets pretty, like, racy, grungy. And he comes home from this trip, and he's, you know, noticeably kind of quiet, and his dad said, well, how did the camping trip go? How did you do? And his son just starts crying. And his dad's like, well, what happened? What's wrong? He goes, Dad, I never heard stuff like that before. He goes, I didn't know what to do or what to say. I didn't want to hear that stuff. It hurt that someone would even do that or talk to me. Teenage boy starts crying. It was so cool when the family was telling me the story. One of the grandpas, he said, you know, we had to comfort him. They didn't challenge him and say, well, stop your crying. Come on. It's not that big of a thing. You're going to hear a lot worse than that as you grow up. No, they understand that there's a time to comfort people. Your children are going to need times where the best thing you can do is you just put your arms around them. You don't try to fix them. You don't give them any ideas. They just need to be comforted, which is very different than making something comfortable. I'm not talking about making it easy. I'm not talking, you know, you're not saying comfortable is not the same as comforted. He needed to be comforted and affirmed and told by his dad and his grandpa, I'm glad that made you cry. That is so awesome that that's the kind of a kid you are. And no, that stuff they were saying is not right. And I'm glad you have that kind of a heart. He needed to be comforted. Now, you may have grown up in an environment that didn't have a lot of that. And you still needed it. And you need to know God's not going to pressure you. And you need to know He's not afraid to, in a way that's real, somehow get His arms around you and comfort you. Because sometimes you need it. And this idea of cheering, so our grandson, about a year and a half old, Lewis, and we cheer him all the time. He's over at our house or I'm over at their house. And, you know, he's constantly getting cheered. I mean, it's like you set up opportunities for Lewis to get cheered. I'll take my little beanie cap off and throw it on the ground and he'll wander over and pick it up and bring it over to me, you know, and we'll start cheering for him, you know. I said, oh, great, you know, thank you, cheering for him. He, you know, he puts a toy away in the toy box. We break out cheering, you know. It's just like the greatest thing. We're cheering for him and everything, you know. Because he needs a lot of cheering right now. He's learning how to do things. He needs people to cheer for him. And I was thinking about him this week, I thought, I wonder why we stop doing that for each other over just small things. We know that it works. I mean, you go to the University of Utah, and I mean, the crowd is going crazy, home field advantage. We know we have cheerleaders. We know cheering works. It's not like we're out on the field playing the game, but we know that when the crowd gets involved and they're cheering, 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 we know it helps. I wonder why we stop. He's going through his little life right now, and we're just cheering him on. You can see the effect on him. He's so thrilled that he figured out how to put a pillow on the couch. Why? Because somebody noticed and cared enough to cheer for him and say, wow, that's great what you're doing. This summer, there's someone that needs you to cheer for him. And if you wait for them to win the Nobel Peace Prize, or do some amazing thing. Or what if we just took a step back and said, well, it works with little kids. Maybe it would work with us. Just find ways to cheer. This is one part of the Bible. So comfort each other and give each other strength just as you are doing now. It's much different than criticizing, by the way. Because that's a lot of what our culture is. We're going to be critical of people and correct them and tell them how to do things. They're not doing things okay. We're talking about that in hero making. This is one that's kind of close to home for me. After one pastor had preached his first sermon at his new church, a guy walked over him and said, Pastor, that sermon stunk. The pastor was trying to be reasonable and open about it, so he asked, well, what didn't you like about it? The man replied, in the first place, you read it. In the second place, you read it poorly. Thirdly, it wasn't worth reading in the first place. After he walked away, another man came up behind him and said to the pastor, don't listen to old Jim. He just repeats what everybody else says. I was like, but life can be like that. We can actually think we're helping people when we're critical of them. I don't think so. Challenging helps. Comforting helps. Cheering helps. Not being a critic. So this summer, really simple, like bringing the best out in other people. Because here's the difference, and write it in your notes. The bottom line, the greatest hero is a hero maker. Here's the bottom line. It's because they care. Let me read you a little part of the Bible. He who is greatest among you will be the one who cares for you. The person who thinks he's important will find out how little he's worth. The person who's not trying to honor himself will be made important. So that was the question, who do you care about?